were unveiling the marker at the Dr. Helms home. And so you've been involved with getting that to where he's remodeling or reconstructing. Yes. So I'm going to go ahead and let you come and be in front of the computer now and give your program. And thank you so much.
Do I have to smile?
Are you
up
for election?
No. Thank you, and I appreciate you asking me to come, and hope I won't be too boring. I made a poster. I had one, which I put on Facebook, but I can't find it. Now, how do you lose one that size? So I made another one this week. Yeah. And also, I've got some brochures over here. There's five different ones. And so, stories I give, there's more detail if you look at the brochures. I told about Gowdy. I always heard that it was begun because of a railroad come to town. But I've never found any proof on that. So if anybody ever can come across that, I've been going through the old newspapers, newspapers.com, I think it is, and newspaper service, I think. There's two different sites it's got for Rush County newspapers. What I have found, though, that Yachty was organized in 1890, and under that name, and I found this from a newspaper article, it was the same time that the post office was open, and the article said, "We now propose to start a nice little town by the name of Gowdy, which we hope will be a good, prosperous little business place for years to come." That was in June of 1890. Evidently, not too much maybe happened as far as houses and stuff, because 8 years later, in September of 1898, another article said, "Yachty is on a boom. Mr. Brookbank's house is almost complete. George Morris will soon build a new house on his lot, and several new homes will come up soon." So, I need some time maybe to go into the courthouse and try to look up where people lived. I've been going looking at some census record of Gowdy, but it was named after John Kennedy Gowdy, who lived here in Rushville. He was a Civil War veteran. He became sheriff in Rush County in 1870 at the age of 27. The youngest at that time to want to be sheriff. And 12 years later, in 1882, he was the Rush County Auditor. By 1890, he'd been elected chairman of the Republican State Central Committee. In 1890 is the year that Gowdy was named after him. And I really don't know why. He lived in Rushville, and I don't know what the connection was. He was the church there in Gowdy was a Methodist church, and he was a member of the Methodist church. But because in later years, Gowdy actually, in 7 years later, 1897, he was appointed the consul general to Paris by President McKinley. That was in 1897. And he remained in Paris for 8 years before returning to Rush County in 1905. And June of 1898, while he was in Paris, he donated a new bell for the church, and I'll get into the church in a few minutes, that had just been rebuilt, the Methodist church. So there again, I could see if it was late 1800s, where they may have named Gowdy after him, but I still haven't figured out why what the connection was as early as 1890. The first building that was be where now is Gowdy would be in the schoolhouse. It was Orange Township District Number 2. It was on the northeast corner at the crossroad. And it was there as early as 1873, and I'm sure it was there before that time, but I don't have a date when it actually started. And a wooden building, it was a wooden building to start with. It was if you look at the pictures here, there's a picture of a wooden building, and it's a schoolhouse with kids in front of it. And that was taken when it was a wooden building. It became a brick building in 1889. And it after the school closed, it became the Gowdy Methodist Church Annex Building, which was the church was right across the road from it. And so the church started having dinners and other events in the old schoolhouse. It's now a home. If you see it, it's a brick home, one story. You never think that it was a schoolhouse. I mean, they did a very excellent job in restoring it. Across the road from it was the church, and Ebenezer Methodist Church was its original name. It went back to the year 1830. It never really had a permanent name at home at that time. But they finally got a permanent home there in Gowdy in 1874. The year before, they had a revival at the schoolhouse, and they were impressed with the area. And so in 1874, they built the church. That building was there, but then it burnt down on Christmas Eve of 1897. And it was then, again, at that time, it was the Ebenezer Emmy Church. It was rebuilt the following year, 1898, at a cost of $1,527. It still stands today. It's been my brother purchased the land, and he's gone now, but his widow and nephew live there, and the nephew has kept it restored. And it was closed. The church itself was closed in 1963, and the Methodist organization came and took all the contents, the seats and everything else out of the inside. And they wanted the building and the land. Well, it went to court, and turned out the court ruling was to go back to the original landowner, or the current landowner. And this was John Wirth's first case as a lawyer. And rather than get paid, John wanted the sign that hung over the door, which stated Gowdy ME Church, 1830. Now, the sign itself, 1830, would not mean that was the original building, but that's when the church started. And also in back on the sign, it was John recently had an online auction. And the sign was purchased by a resident in the Gowdy area. And he's thinking about giving it to my nephew. To put back on the church. I don't know if he's done that yet. I don't want the word to get out in case he hadn't gotten. He paid $85 for the sign, though. So it's in bad shape, but needs to be restored, need painted and restored. And the bell from the church, I have it. I haven't decided what to do with it yet, but it'd be nice to put it up back close to the church building. The 1898 date was after they rebuilt it. It no longer became the Ebenezer Methodist Church. It became the Gowdy Methodist Church. The new building did. The village had several businesses in its early years. It had the church and the school. Various grocery stores was there over the years. It had a blacksmith shop. It had a hat shop. According to my mom, The people that ran the hut shop, they call them Aunt Did and Uncle Don. Uncle Dunn, Aunt Did and Uncle Dunn. But I've never found out what their real names were, and I'm still searching for the hat shop. Mom and Dad moved there in New Year's Day of 1938. So evidently, I would think the hat shop would have been there shortly thereafter, maybe, and didn't last very long. The post office came in June of 1890. That's the same year that they named the village Gowdy. And it was there a little over 13 years, from 1890 to 1903. And it was the smallest post office in Indiana. There's a picture of it here on the poster. It's kind of hard to see. And then there's a smaller picture, which I can't find, of the original. It came from the Shelbyville newspaper. Bob Crawley, if you remember, anybody remember Bob Crawley, did a lot of work in Rushville, as then he went over to Shelby County and papers. The Shelby County papers are not online, or if they are, I haven't been able to find them. And so the picture of, the good picture of the building was with Martha Warner. It was on her property at the time, and she was standing in front of it. And so I copied it off the old copy of the old picture, of the old poster I had, so it's not too clear. But it was the smallest in Indiana. It was located on the north side of the store. The store itself was a two-story building, and it also is in this one of these pictures here. And it was northeast of the crossroad. And the post office was open on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And somewhere in my papers at home, someone had a envelope with the Yardi post office on it. And I took a copy of it, but I don't know where my copy is. And I'm not sure who had the original. I think it might have been one of the Huckfords, maybe Ethel Huckford. I'm not really quite sure. Now, getting into genealogy, one particular family stands out in Gowdy. It's a Garner family. It was Daniel Garner and his wife Mary Hannah Willie. His wife Mary was, her mother was a Shaw, and they related to Reverend Noah Shaw. And I haven't researched to find just how close they were. They had three children. They lived on the, they didn't live right in Gowdy, but they lived on the south of Gowdy. If you go out of Gowdy, on the quarter of a mile, there's a house on the curve, which I call the Dillinger House, and we'll get into that story later. But then I think the field there, I think back in that field somewhere, was the Garner House. They had three children, Bill Garner, and he had two sisters, Goldie and Ardella. Bill was the owner of the stone quarry that was now down on 244. It's still there at the time, though. It was the original stone quarry, which is now a pond, was Jim McCarkle's pond. And the of course, the stone quarry now has moved, that was filled up, and it's filled up with water. And then they went across the road, and now they're back even further north on the stone quarry. But anyway, he owned the stone quarry. The two sisters, I first get into Goldie. Goldie Garner, she married Sylvie Headley in 1907. They lived in Gowdy in the lot, which is now my vacant lot, where I have an annual Gowdy gathering in September of every year. And it's a half acre lot, but that's where the original house was. The house burnt down in January of 1914. Then they moved south of Gowdy to the house on the west side of the road, right where the jog is. If you, a quarter of a mile just south of Gowdy, just where there's a slight jog there. And Headley himself was constantly made the newspaper headlines, not in a good way, though. Back in the 1920s and the 30s, numerous arrests, liquor violations, auto theft, hog theft, and the list goes on and on. He was in federal prison from May to December of 1929. The same time, same period, or around the same period of time, when John Dillinger was also in federal prison from 1924 to 1933. So it's all probability they would have been in, supposedly in the same prison around 1929 when they met. Then after Dillinger got out of prison in 1933 and before his death in 1934, would be about the time that, as the story goes, that he came into Moscow in his big touring car and asked for direction for Headley to live. He wanted to go visit Selby Headley. Sue Wyman was age of 10 years old, was at the store when the touring wagon came up. She lived with her parents in a yellow brick house next to the covered bridge, and she married Don Miller. Most of you remember not Don and Sue Miller. And this was Sue when she at the age of 10, and she directed them to Gowdy. Then the story goes that Headley and Dillinger went into the woods behind the house and were target practicing. Now, another person that confirms this story was 3 years old at the time, Alan Hirsch. He just lost his wife this week. Jerry Hirsch just died. I just came from the funeral home a few minutes ago. But he was 3 years old, and they lived just west of Gowdy. He heard gunshots. His father, according to Alan, had heard the story that Dillinger was in the area, and he made Alan go in the house. He wouldn't let him stay outside to play. And that was in 1933. Dillinger then was gunned down in July of 34. So that's the story on the John Dillinger visiting Gowdy. But those two, Headley and Dillinger, was not the only two bad guys in Gowdy. John and Anellie Smith moved 1 mile west of Gowdy in 1937, across the road from where Alan Hirsch now lives. In 1941, their son Ralph was the subject of a nationwide hunt. He was suspected of kidnapping a North Carolina policeman. Prior to 1941, he had numerous other incidents against him. 1927, in Franklin, he was in jail for having for a second degree burglary. 5 years later, in 1932, in Florida, he was received a robbery sentence, and he escaped from that facility. And then he was arrested at another location and served 13 years for auto theft. He was released on parole in 1938. But then after he got out of that prison or jail, the Florida police got wind of him, and they arrested him, put him back in jail to serve out his time there. So now we're in June of 1941, and the FBI comes in and they stake out the Smith house, and also across the road where that was the Kramis house, the Kramis family, Lawrence Kramis, that later moved into Gowdy as one of our neighbors. And by the time, they lived across the road from the Smith house. And it's, and I got this confirmed tonight with Alan. It was where Alan Hirsch's house now is. It's where Kramis has lived at that time. But the FBI staked it out to see if he would return. Phyllis Kramis, at the age of 11, recalls the FBI sleeping in the barn and using her parents' bedroom to view the Smith house. Some of you may know Phyllis. She married Lee White, lived in Manila, and she was a teller at the old Restro National Bank for 13 years. She just died not too many years ago. Her daughter is Lisa Evans, if anybody knows Lisa Evans, and she lives here in town. But Smith never came back to the home. He was captured in North Carolina. Now we're going to head to the other sister. Wait a minute here. Let's see. Goldie's sister, Ardella Mae Garner, but she became known as Della. She married a Leroy Jones and was living in Shelbyville. Now, if you go through some of the books, and I brought a book in on the life of the Birdmen of Alcatraz. It mentions her name being from Shelbyville, and that she was a widow lady, but she wasn't a widow. She was divorced. She was an avid lover of canary birds and was raising them. She offered one as a prize in a publication, and the winner of that canary was Robert Strode, I think that's the way you pronounce his name, who later we know as the Birdman of Alcatraz. He was serving time in the Leavenworth, Kansas prison, and he was raising canaries while he was there, and he also was writing books on them as well. They started corresponding together back and forth, and in 1930, she moved to Kansas City to be near him. She found out that, Leavenworth wanted to transfer him out of their prison. He'd killed one of the guards there. And, but Della found out that they couldn't do that, move him out of there, if he was married. So she wrote up a marriage contract and filed it with the Kansas State courts. So they were married by proxy, by mail. And this marriage, though, however, upset his mother. His mother had been trying to keep him from getting transferred to Alcatraz. So, but when she found out about him, or the marriage, she said, well, the heck with it. Let him go. And so he was transferred in 1942 to Alcatraz. Alcatraz is out in the ocean. It's just offshore of San Francisco. And he was there. That was 1942 when he got there. 21 years later, he met up with Burt Lancaster. Burt Lancaster was doing a movie on the life of the Birdman. And the Birdman never did get to see the movie because he died the following year. And I never have seen the movie myself. I'm sure there's a lot of, like a lot of movies there, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff in there that's not really real. Della was not really connected with Gowdy. Like I said, as far as the researchers and people that knew her, they said, well, she was a widow lady from Shelbyville. But I did trace her down, and she was from Gowdy. And I recently contacted the writer of this book that I've got on display over here and told her the history on Della, and she answered back that she was glad to hear this. My connection with Gowdy, because I've been there since I was born. Like I said, my parents moved there in January 1st of 38. So I looked through the 1950 census of Gowdy. I would have been 6 years old at the time. And this is some of my memories of Gowdy at that time. There was one old lady in the area. I never did see her. She lived three or four houses away. She stayed in the house all the time. And her yard was growed up. She never kept it mowed. In fact, one of the neighbor boys used to hunt squirrels in their yard. But I thought she was a witch. I never told my parents this, but in my mind, at 6 years old, that there's a witch living in that house. I won't give you her name, but you might know her. And next door to us was Ode and Bessie Bennett. For some strange reason, I didn't call her Bessie, or I didn't call her Mrs. Bennett. I called her Uncle Benny. Not Aunt Benny, but Uncle Benny. And she had a record player. And I was a teenager and listened to Dick Clark on his Saturday night program. He offered special records he put together. And so I sent off of those records, but I didn't have a record player to play it. So I'd go over to their house and play it. Well, for the strange thing, I never understood at the time, Ode, her husband, always left the house whenever I got over there with my records. So I guess he didn't appreciate it. LaRue Kirk had a store on the southwest corner of the town, and I do remember going with Mom up there from time to time to look at things. I also remember a lady, she wasn't my grandma, but we called her Grandma Wagner, and she made real good sugar cookies. Then there was a neighbor that lived just to the east of us, Eddie G. and Kate Thompson. They were parents to Martha Warner, if anybody remembered Martha Warner, that lived in Gowdy. The strange thing about Eddie G, in the summertime, he wore these felt-lined boots. In the wintertime, he went barefoot out in the snow. And then there was a girl in the neighborhood, same age I as it was, Ruth Ann Patterson, and she sewed the grit paper. I remember the grit newspaper that came out every week for 10 cents. And she went around from house to house every week to sell the paper. And the Huckster wagon came in on every Thursday. The Huckster wagon, if any of you remember, was a school bus that was, the seats were taken out and they put groceries in. And we would put out a red flag on Thursdays if we wanted it to stop. And I remember going in, and I was allowed to buy some Kool-Aid. I think they maybe a penny or maybe 2 cents package. And my dad sold Christmas trees at Christmas time. He went down in Jefferson County to cut them and bring them back. That's where he was originally from. He had a 1950 red Chevy pickup. And so he would come back full of Christmas trees. And it's funny now, you see quite often the pictures of the red Chevy truck. And people's been giving me copies of that and little souvenirs of that ever since that time. The other thing that was going back years ago, and there's a picture here of the guys at the Gowdy Gas Well. That area has always been good with natural gas wells, and we still have one. There's five on our well that was dug in 1956, five families. We never have had any problems with it. Each family puts in $50, and we put it in a savings account. We've got about 9,000 in that account now. If there is any problems through it, they can work on it. But the well people, and they were and still is from Blue Ridge, said don't do any work trying to clean your well out. You can do more damage. But ours was not the only one. There's one or two other gas well companies in town. So we don't have to worry. In the wintertime, we've got our own natural gas, and don't have to worry about that cost. And so that's some of my memories of Gowdy. And I'm still researching. I still want to find out who Aunt Did and Uncle Don are. And and I want to go through, I want to try to locate, especially these houses that were built in 1898 with those two names, to see just where they may have been. And try to figure out. But that's my story.